I said, Lent is starting next week, and every year Lent is my hard reset when it comes to my eating habits.
Welcome to the Pints and Pews podcast. I'm your co-host, Dennis.
And I'm your other co-host, Robert. And we're just a couple of guys talking the Catholic faith over a pint or two of our favorite beers.
So why don't you pour yourself a pint, pull up a chair, and listen in for the next little while.
As we take the faith seriously, but not necessarily ourselves.
And as always, if you want to take part in the conversation or have an idea for the podcast, leave us a comment or swing by our Facebook page and drop us a message.
Dennis, buddy, how are you doing this afternoon, my friend?
Good, Robert. Just curious, has anybody ever left us an idea for? I know people have commented and made mostly nice comments, but has anybody given you an idea for the podcast?
Yeah, we've had a few people drop a line and give ideas for the podcast.
Have we ever gone with one?
Yeah, I think the biggest one and the best one comes from a childhood friend of mine. His name's Mike, and he introduced us to John Dawson, who
did the music
for the Mass.
Yeah, that was really good.
And also the wrestling.
I forgot about the wrestling. I learned so much about music. Yes. Right.
So that's probably the biggest and best one. But we've had other people drop a line. We've had people drop a line. Even Brett Tholeman, who I think listens from time to time. And then he suggested his book on Padre Pio, on St. Padre Pio. And yes, that was another great guest.
He was a great guest. Yeah, we've had a lot of good guests, haven't we? A lot of interesting topics, Robert, that I've learned so much.
100%.
100%. Just like RCIA on Tuesday nights, I learned so much.
Oh, and the same. And this is my second or third go around the RCIA as a catechist. And I still learn. And I think it's great, too, that we've got five catechists in the program. And so there's five different voices, five different approaches, which I think is key when you have a large group like we have. We have 10 catechumens. Who will then be called the elect after this Sunday. I think it's great for them as well, because they're coming from 10 different places as well to the Catholic faith. So for them to have those different voices, I think is huge.
That's great. And we have different, like you say, different Protestant faith groups and a couple of Hindu people coming over and stuff. And you know what? I mentioned that to Father Laszlo when he was at Mass at the school, and he says, wow, that's a really good number. And he says that 10 seems like great. And I says, yeah, 10's probably one of the bigger numbers. He goes, unless you're in one of the Chinese parishes north of the city, when 100 is not uncommon.
Wow.
100. Wow.
I'd never heard of that.
Isn't that impressive?
I'd never heard of that. I know, having gone to the Rite of the Elect last year, which is kind of the eastern end of Toronto plus Durham region where we are. And there were some large groups, but none as large as 100.
Yeah, he says 100. It's not uncommon in a lot of the years to get 100.
Now, I wonder, though, too, if he's including like the children that are coming into the church with their parents as well.
I don't think so. I don't know if it was just people that are, you know, catechumens who had already been baptized, just, you know, confirmation, or just people fresh into the faith. But I was impressed. That's a big number. How do you run? You'd be run off your feet. I mean, you are run off your feet with 10.
You would need someone that was their only job.
That's
to
right.
Keep that straight.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there's no way you can do that as a single session for 100 people, because you would lose so much. I mean, one of the best things we've done with our RCIA program at the parish in the last few weeks is we've shortened the amount of instruction time, or the direct instruction. And then we have half hour to 45 minutes of small group conversations where it's one catechist, two catechumens, and their sponsors, right? So really a group of five, and it allows them to ask any question that they want, whether it's on what we were talking about that day, or I always open it up like anything about the Catholic
faith. And they do open up more in those small groups for sure. And I've noticed that just with the catechumens in the group, asking questions that they might not ask in the big group. And you also do those little mini sessions, or you have done a couple on the Saturdays, which kind of allow catch up for people, or certainly to get a little bit more intimate into the faith, maybe.
Yeah, and I have to do a couple more of those coming up. I know my next couple of weekends are pretty busy. Okay, between here and Easter, like just mm-hmm. looking at the calendar, I'm going to have to schedule in sleep, I think. No, and I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's not that busy, and Father Chris has been absolutely excellent to ensure that I find a balance between my life in the parish and my life at home. But yeah, through Lent and into Easter, it is a busy time in any parish life.
And that's why I know why you have to book these Pints and Pews podcasts, month, 2 months ahead of time, just because you're just so run off your feet at the parish itself.
Well, just so busy. And a large part of it is my own personality, as you know, of being a little hyper-organized.
Hyper. Right. A little organized? A little, yeah. Just slightly, Robert, of course.
Yeah. So, and the thing is with the parish life being so busy, I find that my spare days, my spare moments, that I don't like over organizing my spare days as well, my days off. But that being said, if I don't put things in on the calendar that I would like to do that are relaxing, whether it's meeting with friends or getting together with family or the recording the Pints and Pews. If I don't do that, by the time I get to the day off, something's already taken it over, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I need to do more of that once I retire, Robert.
That being said, though, last weekend when I had 2 days in a row off and really had not a whole lot planned, it was kind of nice just to sit back, pour myself a pint and read my book for a little bit as well and just doze off on the sofa whenever I wanted. That was pretty sweet.
Sit and chillax. Was that the first 2 days off you had since the Christmas break?
I think so. Probably, I think that was the first time I've had 2 days in a row off. And a lot of the reason behind that is just the way my schedule, my calendar falls in the parish is that Fridays is always my day off, but I have things on Thursday and I have things on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
Right.
So that's right. So you get 2 days, but just not in a row.
Exactly. So usually 2 days. Yeah. And then next week I'll get 3 days off because we have the family day long weekend.
Right. Right. And then sometimes you don't even get the 2 days because sometimes you have to come in on the Sunday for coffee Sunday and, do a few things around the parish that time.
Well, exactly. But that's
all good
for the course. And, there's just always seasons, and anytime I'm spending an extra day in the parish at this point in time, when things quieten down, I'll be able to take that time then. Time off. So,
and it's not bad because you're in church kind of and stuff. It's just, if it was a little closer, it'd be nicer though, River. You do have a bit of a trek, but
it's a bit of a trek.
A little bit tougher.
Exactly. Yeah. Last night it took me an hour. Usually it takes me 35 minutes. Yesterday took me an hour.
So there you go.
And that's just because of the weather.
Yeah.
But usually most of my drive, I'm counting cows in the pasture beside the highway. So
yeah, that's always nice.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
I'm looking as the clock goes here, buddy. And my voice is getting a little gravelly because I'm getting a little thirsty.
Good.
So what are you drinking here today, pal?
I have got a Gross Pilsner. I like the Pilsner, Robert. Now it's I find it very crisp. I started drinking Pilsner probably back in the day in Australia. We used to work at this brew pub and we did the Sail and Anchor actually out in Fremantle, and we did make our own Pilsner, and that's where I started to get into the Pilsners. There's no wheat beers, there's no IPAs, there's nothing fancy about it. It's just a good, strong, crisp, harsh drink, and I like it. Probably best suited for like a hot summer day, but nonetheless.
I was going to say, in the summer, I enjoy a nice, clean, crisp Pilsner. It just takes the thirst off, right?
The thirst off, exactly.
Right. You would probably then enjoy a Kolsch, which is like a Pilsner. It's from Cologne, Germany.
Right.
The Kolsch beer is also clean, crisp. It's a little bit lighter than a Pilsner. Not a light beer, just a little bit lighter than a Pilsner.
Right, right. Oh, I'll have to try that. Yeah. I've had the Grolsch before. It's been a while. I mean, it's a popular selling beer, as you know.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And the beer I've brought today, sir, and I selected this beer. I picked it off the shelf a few weeks ago when I thought, okay, I miss it a little bit. And then I selected it for today because it's going to go a little bit with the topic of conversation. But I have a Duvel.
Duvel.
From Belgium.
Yeah. Have I seen that in Belgium, or I've seen that? I've probably seen it in both places.
In both places.
So which one do you have? There's a couple of them, right?
Yeah, just the regular Duvel strong beer, 8.5%. So I could be asleep by the time we're done here, buddy.
The regular beer, 8.5%.
Oh, and it just exploded out of the bottle too.
I've had that happen to me on this show a few times, Robert. Don't worry, get a quick towel, and we'll I'll talk to the listeners while you're getting all set up there. Yeah, I like those, but you have to be careful because they do explode, they do spill all over. But 8.5%, that is that's probably a little bit strong in the afternoon. Mind you, it is a Belgian beer, so it's always good tasting. And I've had that one for sure, and I've had a couple of other ones. But I'm just wondering with the Duvel, does a Duvel make for a Dunkel kind of day?
Or? No, it's a nice lighter color, crisper beer. I'll hold it up for you in a second. I don't even have the right glass for it, right? Which the purist would go hard on. But you can see
that is a light. That's
a nice almost, light yes. golden color.
Almost like a. Almost looks like one of those IPAs, kind of very. I don't know how you'd put it. Actually, mine's looks like the same kind of color there, Robert.
Yeah, the Pilsner color, that nice crisp yellow, that golden.
Yeah. See, I'm not seeing the golden in yours as much as I'm probably seeing more the golden in mine.
Oh, yeah. No, yours is a little bit clearer than this one. But I haven't had a disaster like that in a long time. So, buddy, are you able to say grace before beer
for us? Yes, I'm ready to go, sir. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Bless, O Lord, this creature beer, which thou hast deigned to produce from the fat of grain, that it may be a salutary remedy to the human race, and grant, through the invocation of thy holy name, that whoever shall drink it may gain health in body and peace in soul. Through Christ our Lord.
Amen.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, Robert.
Oh, just as I remember it. Crisp, a little bit effervescent.
Yes.
Tastes much like a lighter Left Blonde, but it does have a little bit of that Trappist taste to it.
I wish I had one right now. This Grolsch is great. Dan down the road dropped this by for me.
Oh, and special shout out to Dan's brother.
That's AJ, right.
Who sent us a note.
Really nice email there.
In, so.
We'll have to mention that definitely down the road.
So, Dennis, like I said, I picked the Duvel for today because it ties in a little bit with what I wanted to talk about. And unfortunately, I didn't have the right glass for it. I did grab my old flame glass, which is kind of the shape of a Duvel glass. Mm-hmm. And I figured, you know, what better place to put the Duvel, which is Flemish for devil. You know, what better glass to put that in than one that's the old flame? Because flames and the devil.
That's good. Nice connection.
Two bad things that go together, right? So, but I wanted to talk about spiritual warfare in Lent. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about Lent and get into the spiritual warfare end of things. On that, warfare keeps wanting to come out as warfarin.
Yeah.
So warfare. Two steps into the Duvel 8.5, and already my tongue seems to be numb.
Just don't have two of those before adoration tonight, Robert. Right? Well,
exactly. So I wanted to start off talking about Lent as I was scanning through Twitter earlier today, and I'm really trying to reduce the amount of social media scrolling that I'm doing through Lent. So I did go onto the Twitter, or the platform formerly known as Twitter,
X
today, and I came across a guy. He's called the Roman Pontiff, and his handle is @thePontiff.
So that's Puntiff.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. I believe he's a priest because the picture he's wearing, the Roman collar, he's out of Ohio. But he had this great little tweet.
Not to be confused with the Roman Pontiff, but go ahead.
Exactly. So this is a priest who enjoys puns as well as saving souls. Right?
Okay.
And so what he put out there earlier today was this. Someone told me they hope Lent goes by quickly. I promised them it would be a fast season.
And that's thought, the pun.
I thought that's perfect. I love that. I love that. And so with that in mind, even though we're a couple days in today, but we can think ahead because this episode won't come out for a few weeks. It'll be mid to late Lent when it does come out. So I want to ask you, buddy, like, how's your Lent going?
Going well. Yeah. But I mean, again, it's early though, Robert, right?
Early days.
We start off with our fast and abstaining, and we continue the abstaining on the Friday. Not so much the fast, but certainly not eating as much maybe. And the snack foods are not there anymore. So that's hopefully I can, we were talking about that, I think on the RCA on Tuesday night, maybe we can, you know, take some of this and move it forward after Lent, you know, get a little bit healthier in our diets, maybe for myself at least.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. I was just talking with my own family doctor last Friday. So the Friday mm-hmm. before Lent started, and one of her questions was, you know, how are your eating habits going? And I kind of said, I said, Lent is starting next week, and every year Lent is my hard reset when it comes to my eating habits, when it comes to some of my other bad habits as well. And I really like what you say, that we need to take our Lenten sacrifices and turn them into Easter habits.
Yes, Easter habits, right. And the other thing is too, Robert, and I think we might have mentioned this as well on the Tuesday, is we need to fast from and feast on. So if we're doing something that's leaving that void, we should be filling that up with something else. I don't know if that's a good work or almsgiving or something like that, but you know, the chance that we've been disciplined enough maybe to make that sacrifice, and then we should be doing maybe something positive in return. What do you think?
Oh, 100%, 100%. When I've spoken with people about this, and I've given a few Lenten retreats in my day, and when I speak to people about that, I say, like, if you're fasting, say, from having a donut in the morning with your coffee, mm-hmm. well, take that $1.50 or $2, however much a donut costs these days, mm-hmm. take that money that you're saving from not having the donut, mm-hmm. put it in the poor box, give it to the St. Vincent de Paul or any other fabulous charity.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's funny. We did a little assignment at school that I got from a colleague, and we put it to the kids. It was, you know, fasting from and feasting on. And one girl had mentioned, well, I think I'm going to give up Starbucks for Lent. And she said she was doing the math in her head. It was a few times a week, $16 every time she goes and gets a couple of drinks. She reckoned it was about $400 a month. So whoa. I said, if you could save that at least 10%
payment.
I said, if you could save at least 10%. I hope she was exaggerating, at least 10% of that, and give that to charity. And she thought, hey, that's a good idea. There's $40 for charity right there.
Wow. Yeah.
I know.
That is an amazing point. And I think that's a huge lesson for that young lady.
Absolutely. And I think as well, Robert, doesn't necessarily have to be something physical like that. It could be fasting from your phone on a regular basis and feasting on more conversation with your family instead.
Oh, for sure.
Right? It could
for
be that, because sure. I know we're on our phones all the time, both of us, right? So that's something I could definitely, thank God I'm on, not in social media. I'd be even worse.
Yeah, and that's what I said. Like, for me, I'm not completely off social media. We use social media to promote mm-hmm. the podcast, right?
Absolutely.
But both my wife and I have decided this Lent is we're going to reduce the amount of scrolling time.
Good for you. That's excellent.
And like you say, instead of the two of us being in separate rooms scrolling through our phones, mm-hmm. we're sitting down having a conversation.
Conversation, yeah. And if I can just get off, you know, my pension calculator and PGA Tour, I'll be all set.
There you go. And it doesn't necessarily need to be conversation. So you don't put down your phone and then
right.
go looking for the nearest person to have a conversation. You could be doing spiritual reading. And it, right. even with spiritual reading, it could be, well, I'm not going to scroll through social media with my phone, but I'll do this reading through my phone, or I'll get the readings of the day on my phone, right? I'll use the phone to guide me in praying the rosary.
Well, I would need my phone just because of the prayers that we have on here and a decade of the rosary every day, just something maybe a little bit more for Lent.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And the one thing we need to remember as we're starting out Lent, when this episode comes out, as we're making our way through Lent, you know, it was never meant to be easy.
No.
It was never meant to be easy. And because of that, as we do struggle with our Lenten sacrifices, with our Lenten promises, the Duvel, Beelzebub, Lucifer, he's kind of lurking in the background, waiting for those moments to attack. And as I was preparing for today, and we're going to get to our saintly sayings later, and I looked up saint quotes for Lent, and I came across this one from Saint Francis de Sales, and I thought this is perfect for what I wanted to talk about as far as spiritual warfare in Lent. And so Saint Francis de Sales says, although we may be able to do but little, the enemy nevertheless stands more in awe of those whom he knows can fast. So even if our sacrifice is small, right? Even if our sacrifice is, just taking that one sugar cube out of our coffee.
Right. Morning, or taking it in black without any cream. Yep.
Right. Even if it's just something small like that, it's going to drive the devil bonkers that we are fasting, that we are exercising spiritual discipline, right? And to draw ourselves closer to the Lord. And so nothing scares the enemy more than when we do draw closer to the Lord.
Right. And I think if there's ever a slip up though, Robert, which we all, I think that's the time we double down. So for some reason on the first Friday, one did eat meat, that's done. Okay. The next five Fridays are without, and you double down, or you're fast and you ate something, you gave up, you had a little snack or something by mistake, you forgot, you double down and you fast, because the worst thing would be, like you say, to give in to Satan in that respect and just give it up and say, oh, I've already messed up, I'm done for the next 35 days.
And so that leads into one of the quotes I was going to share later, but I'll share it now, because what you said just perfectly fits in again with St. Francis de Sales. Have patience with all things, but first of all, with yourself.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And that is exactly what you're just saying. When we do stumble in Lent, when we do slip up, don't beat yourself up about it. Like you say, double down.
Right.
Pick yourself up.
320 days, you're not doing something, and all of a sudden for 40 plus days, if you're doing the Sundays or not, you're doing this. So yeah, you got to give yourself a little bit of a break now and then, I guess, Robert.
Oh, for sure. And like we were saying, the devil is lurking in the shadows, and he is trying to make us stumble. Mm-hmm. He is looking to trip us up. And we need to recognize that, and we need to be aware of that, and we need to be on the lookout for that. And I think he does that through two methods, right? The first one being temptations, and the other one being doubts.
Huh.
Right? And I remember one of my former pastors saying in his homily on Ash Wednesday evening, says he never spends his day thinking about food, except on Ash Wednesday and on Good Friday. Right? On the days that's when good. You are fasting, those are the days you fixate on food.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. And Robert, I don't think it's that, I don't want to say it's that, not that difficult, but I mean, if we look at other faith groups, Islam, for instance, and they have Ramadan and they're asking for a fast throughout the course of the day for 30 days straight. It's a bigger ask. We can manage what we can do. It's not that huge of an ask, is it?
Oh, exactly. But even though we're doing these little things, again, like St. Francis de Sales said, although we may be able to do but little, right, the enemy is going to go after that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so when we give up, like you said, the cream or the sugar in our coffee, those first few sips, like every day for Lent, those first few sips are going to be bitter, bitter, bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be like, oh, not just a little drop. I'll put half a cube of sugar, or we'll be tempted to put that drop of cream in there, right? On Fridays in Lent, when we're called to abstain from meat,
right?
Those are going to be the days that somebody brings a pepperoni pizza into the office for everybody to have at lunch.
Like today.
Right? Yeah. But, like today, unfortunately, you whispered in my ear just before we got started that you were at a function,
right,
at a Catholic institution, and it was wall-to-wall meat at lunch.
Well, it wasn't wall-to-wall meat, but the cool thing about it, there was two types of pizzas, and all the vegetarian pizza was eaten before the couple of meat pizzas that were bought, and that would never happen normally. So there are people still saying no, you know, which is kind of cool, the fact that people are thinking about this, saying, no, I'm on a, you know, I'm staining on Fridays and I'm going to have the vegetarian pizza. Cause you know me, I'm, as we both do, we like our meat lovers, Robert.
Oh, I'm the same as well.
Yeah.
Right. The like more that. Pepperoni it's, and sausage you can throw on there, the better.
So you said it's the temptations and the doubts.
And the doubts.
And he's trying to feed little doubts into us. We're not good enough. Oh, this is stupid. This 40 days, you can't. Absolutely. Trying to feed those little insecurities in our brain to say, oh, what's the point? And that's what he wants to do. And it won't work. Well, it hasn't worked in 2000 years.
And in that moment, when you do stumble, the doubts grow even stronger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And especially at the outset of Lent, that doubt in our minds, like, do I even have what it takes to make it through until Easter?
Easter, yeah. And I we did ask that at RCA, Robert, about the Sundays. And I think Father Kevin did concur with you that, you know, certainly you can, or we don't, as I read once, you don't have to go out of your way to, you know, abstain or fast from the thing that you're fasting. Because of course, Sunday is the feast day, but if you can do it for probably all the better, if you can do it for the full 46 days.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that mm-hmm. comes from today's gospel reading where Jesus himself states that, you know, you can't fast while you're with the bridegroom. Mm-hmm. Right? When the That's bridegroom right. isn't yeah. there, then you can fast. But when the bridegroom is present, you're not to fast. And so on Sundays, when we are there at the church and mm-hmm. we are receiving the Eucharist, right? We are with the bridegroom. We are rejoicing on Sundays, even in Lent. It's a little bit muted, but we still rejoice in our Lord's resurrection on Sundays.
Right.
Right. And so this comes from the Gospel according to Matthew chapter 9, right? Where the disciples of John the Baptist did ask Jesus, well, you know, why aren't your disciples fasting? Mm-hmm. And he says, can the wedding guests mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast.
Right.
Right.
Right. And we don't want to be Pharisaic about it, do we? Like the Pharisees, no. the fasting, no. and, you know, look at me and make sure I'm all disheveled because I'm fasting, right? Make sure, sure to clean up yourself and...
Yeah, yeah, and that comes back to what I always like to say, you know, it's not about what you're fasting from, it's who you're fasting for,
mm.
right? And that nice your point. Fast should be bringing right. you closer to Christ, but also to offering up your sacrifices, offering up your mm-hmm. Lenten sacrifices for the conversion of sinners, or, you know, for the melting of hardened hearts, and offer it even for someone in particular that you know that needs to be drawn closer to Christ. Mm. And yeah. by offering that sacrifice for their intention on a supernatural level,
right.
then you are helping them along. You might not see the fruits of it, but you are helping them along when you do that. So, Dennis, enough of me throwing out different quotes here and there. Do you have a saintly saying for us
I
today?
Do. Got a couple, Robert. Let's try with one, first of all.
You, I can never you go, decide. I'm going to pour a little bit more of my Duvel now that it seems to have settled down and it's not foaming all over the place on me.
I'll go with the first one. I'll just have to remember these so then I can say the rest of them the next time around. From St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe what you like in the Gospels and reject what you don't like, it is not the Gospel you believe in, but yourself. Once again,
I love that. Read that
if
again.
If you believe what you like in the Gospels and reject what you don't like, it is not the Gospel you believe in, but yourself. Don't we do that as Catholics, Robert? Unfortunately, sometimes pick and choose what we want to read from the Gospels or take certain verses out of context.
Yeah. Every time I hear somebody say, well, Jesus would do this or mm-hmm. Jesus would do that, what they're really saying is I'm trying to justify my own fallenness. I'm trying to justify my own sinfulness
right.
by giving it Christ's approval.
Right.
And so yep. that's where that final line in that quote really comes into play, right? You don't believe in the gospel, you just believe in yourself.
Yourself, yeah.
Right. And it brings to mind also that that saying, that very popular saying of cafeteria Catholics, where you pick and choose the different doctrines or dogmas mm-hmm. of the church that you're going to believe and follow, right?
Right. And I think that's crucial because, once again, if you believe what you like in the gospels and reject what you don't like, it is not the gospel you believe in, but yourself. I mean, you know, he is without sin, let him cast the first stone. But then to the prostitute, Mary Magdalene, he says, certainly turn away from sin. He makes sure that he says when he reprimands her to turn away from sin. He doesn't say, okay, everything's fine, right? So we kind of have to, we tend to shorten that verse a little bit, do we not?
The second part of that verse is always forgotten. Now, we all remember your sins are forgiven.
Your sins are forgiven, right.
But we forget the go and sin no more part.
Go and sin no more. And we, there's a few verses like that, right, Robert, where we tend to kind of forget the second part. So that's something to kind of remember as we go forward in Lent, because there's a lot of good in the gospel, but some things kind of speak to the core of who we are, and we kind of need to heed them.
Right.
Well, when we don't want to heed them. Yeah.
And like you were saying before there, Dennis, you know, we're called in Lent to fast from some things, but we should also feast on other things. And if we're going to feast on anything, it should be the gospels and in their entirety. Right. If you go to the Mandarin buffet, which I don't condone during Lent, during good days point. Of fasting and abstinence. But if you were to go to the Mandarin buffet, would you eat just from the dessert pile?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Right. Yeah. Right. You take a little bit of everything.
You'd have at least one egg roll in there before you go into dessert.
For sure. Egg roll. I haven't had an egg roll in ages. You're like talking 80s Chinese food here, Robert.
There you go.
Which one do you, what quote do you have?
So it's not from a saint per se. Like I said, I've already thrown out a couple of quotes from St. Francis de Sales today. And one of them I had lined up for saintly sayings, you know, have patience with all things, but first of all, with yourself, because I wanted to bring that out in Lent and talking about how, you know, Lent is not easy and we will stumble. I mean, we're 2 days in. I don't know how many times I've caught myself going down the road of one of the sacrifices I wanted to make.
Right.
And I've come really, really close to going over the edge already 2 days in.
I know. It's not easy, but go on.
No. So that's why I wanted to throw that quote out there, just that, you know, we will stumble, but be patient with ourselves and, yeah. and go on. So the other quote I have lined up, again, still dealing with fasting and with giving things up, from my good friend Thomas A. Kempis.
Okay. Right?
And I absolutely love the Imitation of Christ.
Yeah, the Imitation of Christ.
And so the quote I'm bringing from Thomas A. Kempis today is this: nothing, how little soever it may be, if it is suffered for God's sake, can pass without merit in the sight of God.
Mm.
So again, nothing, how little soever it be, if it is suffered for God's sake, can pass without merit in the sight of God. So everything that we suffer, everything that we fast from, everything that we give up, so those little hunger pangs or the bitterness of our coffee, if we're suffering that for God's sake, it will have merit in the sight of God.
Right? Yeah, because I think sometimes we think, Robert, that we have to do the great things. But if we're offering it up, it can be a little thing, right? Something beautiful for God, the little things Mother Teresa talks about. If we're doing those little things and we're doing in the right way and offering those up, why not? You know, who's to say that a great thing is going to get, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I was going to throw out another Teresa there, Dennis.
Yeah, some people can certainly do little things, and that's fine, provided you're doing in the right, you know, you're doing it for the right way, for the right
things, and you're doing it for God. And I was going to throw you throughout the name, you know, Saint Mother Teresa. I was going to shout out here to Saint Thérèse de Lisieux, Saint Teresa of Lisieux. You know, doing little things with great love,
the little way. Yep, absolutely.
Right? And again, Thomas A. Kempis, you know, doesn't matter what we're doing, however little it is, if it's done for God's sake, it will have merit in the sight of God. And it comes back again to what I keep saying when it comes to Lent. It's not about what you're fasting from. It's who you're fasting for.
Who you're fasting for.
I can't amazing, say that right? enough.
No. That's amazing enough. What Thomas A. Kempis, 600, 700 years ago, St. Augustine, 1600 plus years ago, like still very much.
Still relevant today.
Yeah.
It still just blows your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Here we are in the 21st century, you know, with Buck mm-hmm. Rogers, and, you know, we keep thinking that we are, you know, inventing, everything is new and shiny, and we're inventing mm-hmm. all this stuff. You look at 2000 years of church history, we're not inventing anything.
It's amazing.
We're not struggling through anything new. Right. And maybe that's one of the greatest poverties of our age, is that we do not go back and learn from the wisdom of the generations that came before us.
Right. Right. All these quotes and everything within the church still stands the test of time 2000 years later. And we don't go back. You're right, Robert.
And well, you would know this too, Dennis, because you've been there for what, 1900 of those 2000 years?
At least 1850 at least. But yeah, it's amazing how these quotes just, you think of them today and you think, okay, they still make sense. They still resonate with us, with people today, especially in our secular age. Yeah.
Now, Dennis, buddy, do you know what time it is?
I do.
It is time for what?
In the church?
Is that.
And now it's time for What in the Church Is That? Where Dennis tries to stump Robert.
Oh, I don't know which one to do. I think I did a couple last time and I chose one. And then you mentioned somebody earlier on and you talked about demons, and I could go with that one, but I think I'm going to go with this one. So I'll remember to put that one later on. I don't know.
Write all these things down and put them in a file folder, buddy.
Yeah. What's a file folder again, Robert? Okay. I'm going to go with that one because you had spoken about demons and assaults and stuff. So I think I'm going to go with this one here because there's a really good explanation with it. I might mispronounce it. So do certainly correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm very intrigued now.
In the church is the amis or amis. Am I pronouncing it right, Robert?
I would almost pronounce it amice.
See, I was thinking that, but it can't, but that's the hard C with Italian. Is it an Italian word? Certainly a Latin. I'll give you the Latin in a second, but is it amice?
I think I've heard it pronounced amice. If it's what I'm thinking it is.
Yep.
But I could have also heard it pronounced anis, amis. My problem is every time I look at a word, right, my brain goes a little bit sideways because it wants to pronounce it in English and French simultaneously, right? And then you throw in a third or fourth language along with it, and then that's it. There's an explosion.
Amis.
Okay, so the amis.
Yeah.
I heard that, the amis.
Yeah. Amis. What in the church is the amis?
So the amis, if it's what I'm thinking mm-hmm. it is, it's part of the priest's vestments.
Correct.
Okay. So it's part of the priest's vestments, more traditional in as much as that, because now the albs that the priests are wearing, it's almost like the amis is built into it. That the albs the priests are wearing now have the collar that comes up to cover their Roman collar that they're wearing on their shirt underneath. And so the amis is kind of like a square piece of white cloth that would sit over the back of the collar and then would tie around the front. And it's meant to cover the collar on that. But I also know, like you said, there is a greater significance when it comes to the spirituality of that, which escapes me right now. So I'll ask you in a moment to go down that explanation.
And that's excellent though, Robert. But that's
but to go a little bit more. The amis would be the first part of the vestments that the priest puts on before Mass to cover his collar. And then he would put the alb and the surplice, or the alb and the stole and the chasuble over top of that. And the only time I've ever seen a priest wear an amis was with our past pastor, who was very, very traditional and would wear traditional styled vestments, including one that I had never seen before. And I won't mention in case you want to bring it up one time on What in the Church Is That as well. But it was a little cloth that went over the right or left forearm. And we'll leave that for that one.
Now, can you wear it over, just quickly, Robert, could you wear it over the alb? Because the way I'm reading this, it probably is under or over, maybe.
I think it goes underneath the alb because I would see it go on before the alb and then the chasuble.
Okay. So let's go with the, excellent. So let's go with the amus, Latin from amictus, which means, of course, garment, is a rectangular linen cloth used by those who wear an alb if the alb does not completely cover the clothing at the neck. The reason being, this is where we get to the reason behind everything here, Robert, which is very, very interesting when I was researching this. The reason being that in the sacred liturgy, the minister's common clothing should be completely covered since he does not act as himself, but in an official capacity. The amice is called the helmet of salvation. It was worn even on the head in former times and is worn with the prayer that the wearer be protected from the assaults of demons, which you just spoke about earlier on, okay, who wish to distract his mind from attentiveness to the sacred action he is about to undertake.
Wow, that is beautiful. I knew there was really that part of it, but and I had read that before, but that escaped me in the moment.
So I know, I wasn't going to give the whole rest of it. And I thought, this is really nice. I think the listeners need to know this, but you're spot on with that. And I've seen it before. And priest, and I wonder, I don't see it a lot, but I've seen it a couple of times. And I thought, what the heck is that?
Yeah. And as you were talking about it there and just giving the description and saying, you know, how it's to cover the street clothing of the priest. Right. And most priests, especially on Sundays when they're saying mass, will be wearing their Roman collar. But as you were sharing that part of it, you made me think of our last guest, His Eminence Cardinal Collins, mm-hmm. and he was sharing about when he was saying mass in the Jesuit house the one time. And he said all of a sudden, you know, all these men started holding out their hands to concelebrate. He didn't even realize that they were priests because of the way they were dressed. Right. And so when you're sharing that about the amice, I'm thinking about a priest who's showing up to say mass, right, with a polo shirt on or, you know, a t-shirt or something.
Slacks on or chinos on or something like that.
The worst I've ever seen is a priest show up to say mass in shorts and then his alb doesn't go all the way to his shoes, and so all you see are his sandals and his bare legs. And you know, me being me, I'm spending the rest of the mass trying to figure out whether he's got anything on under the alb or not, right? So like, Father, please wear the long pants so that we know you've got something on under
the
alb.
Legs or something like that.
Exactly, because like my whole mass was ruined trying to figure out if he had something on or not.
I guess it's at least better than saying mass in the surf with a boogie board or something like that, Robert. But
you talked about that before.
Sent
too,
me a couple episodes ago. But anyway,
that last part too about it representing the helmet of salvation.
Let me just read that one more time.
Okay,
yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Does the if it does not completely cover the clothing and neck, the reason being that in the sacred liturgy, the minister's common clothing should be completely covered since he does not act as himself, but in an official capacity. The amice is called the helmet of salvation. It was even worn on the head in former times and is worn with the prayer that the wearer be protected from the assaults of demons who wish to distract his mind from attentiveness to the sacred action he is about to undertake.
Right, which is so important.
Absolutely. So important. This one focus for that next hour, right?
And having been a lector, so having been up in the sanctuary, mm-hmm. looking out across the congregation, you see everything, mm-hmm. right? So when the priest is sitting up there in the presider's chair during the readings, more often than not, you'll see them with their eyes closed, because if their eyes are open and they're looking out over the congregation, they can see everything that's going on, mm-hmm. and it's a distraction, right? Yeah. And so they need, again, this spiritual help to remain focused because the demons are trying to distract them and move their attention away from saying the mass and saying it properly and saying it prayerfully.
Prayerfully. Right? Yeah, I love the whole garments that they wear, Robert, because you know what? I don't want to see the priest in a suit and thinking, oh, geez, that tie really doesn't match with that shirt. Why is he wearing a kerchief in his, you know what I mean? That type of thing is a complete distraction. There's no need for it. And this way you're not distracted as a
And that's the whole reason behind the vestments.
Right.
Because when the priest processes in, it's no longer the Father Chris or Father Kevin or Father so-and-so that's coming in. It's Christ that's coming in through them.
In persona Christi, exactly. Right?
And so they are no longer themselves when they are up there saying Mass. It is Christ that is up there.
Right.
And so that's a big part of the vestments, is to take away that individuality and to put on Christ. And that's why sometimes it does bug me to a certain degree when priests have these special vestments that they wear, right? I've seen some come up with a Noah's Ark theme. I've seen others that come up and they have the 12 apostles in here and there. And you know, it is beautiful to have unique vestments, but it shouldn't be to the point where the vestments are drawing our attention away from what really matters, which is Christ in the Eucharist and the Mass.
Right. Yeah. Actually, yeah, because you're looking at the stole and you're thinking, what is that design on the stole, right? That's just a distraction.
I mean, we could have a whole other episode, buddy, on this whole stoles.
Topic. On stoles that we've seen over the last, well, in your case, 70 years, but, you know, we've seen over the last decades.
Were vestments even in play when you went to your first Mass there, pal?
Back in the day. I always thinking of my first Mass. I guess it's been a while.
Dennis, pal, do you have any shout-outs for
us? Yeah, do you got a shout-out? You do yours first, Robert, and then I'll do mine.
Okay, couple of shout-outs. The first one will be really, really quick. Our Lent episodes always seem to be the most popular, which is very flattering. And thank you. I guess in some insignificant way, we are helping our listeners have a faithful and fruitful Lent. But this Lent episode, or our first one for Lent 2024, saw a huge spike in Florida. So thank you to our Florida listeners.
Our Floridians. Excellent. Were they
I wonder, Dennis, if it's our friend Dan down in Florida, who has the hat, he has the shirt, and so hopefully he's out there.
Or maybe they're just snowbirds, but probably not.
I don't know. I mean, that's your generation, the snowbirds, buddy.
The snowbirds, that's right. Yeah, half my family are snowbirds. Okay, that was a quick one.
And then the other shout out I had was this past weekend in the Archdiocese of Toronto, we had Marriage Sunday.
That's right.
I don't know if they do this in other dioceses, but I know particularly in the Archdiocese of Toronto, Marriage Sunday, the Archbishop has a special Mass at the cathedral.
Correct.
For couples who are celebrating milestone anniversaries, whether it's 10 years, 25 years, 40, 50, 60, and beyond.
Congratulations, Robert and Ellie, on your 40th. And no, sorry, that's not the...
Not quite there yet.
I don't
It'll be 28 years in August.
I don't want to get in trouble with Ellie. That was
just a joke. No. Don't be getting us in that much trouble. But the cathedral was packed.
Yes.
The cathedral was absolutely packed. And I think the oldest married couple that was there, 65 years.
Wow.
65 years.
And Father Chris did the same at our church. And we saw a couple couples with 59 years. So very impressive, Robert.
Yeah. And I really love what Father Chris did as well, as he had the different, you know, wedding anniversary dates or milestones. So he'd started with engaged couples up to 5 years married,
right?
Had them stand up and then they sat down and then he went everyone else and he kind of went until he got to, you know, 50, 55 years and 55 over,
plus. That's right.
Right. But then I really love what Father Chris did at the end of that, where he said then, okay, all you people stay standing. Anyone who's 55 years married plus, you keep standing. Those of you that are engaged and 5 years married and under, you stand up.
Keep standing,
And he said, it's coffee Sunday after Mass. You young people, you need to search out these people that have been married for over 55 years and you need to talk to them.
So did anybody come up and talk to you after Mass?
Well, because we haven't been married that long and my wife wasn't there, unfortunately.
That's okay. You could have still talked to you. Of course, you haven't been married 55 years. You just look like you might be of that age, Robert. But I was so impressed. And you know what? They're very sprightly, too. I was expecting people in walkers and stuff. I talked to one guy coming out. He's 59 years. He looked like he was in his 60s.
Buddy, at your age, everybody looks sprightly.
I'm telling you. Well, they could be. I talked to somebody who was given coffee out, Mrs. Beatty, and she said she was 59, and I think she's only about 80. So I'm thinking to myself, like back in the day, they did get married quite young, right?
Oh, that's right. Like the last generation, our parents' generation, right, did get married quite a bit younger. What's your shout out there, Dennis?
Oh, my shout out is to our youngest daughter, Robert, Kate, who's at university, and she turns 19 tomorrow. So we just want to wish her a very happy birthday, a very special year, because as you know, that is of legal age to be in establishments in Ontario and Canada for the most part.
So she's now old enough to join us here on the Pints and Pews and have
a pint. That's right. She's now old enough to join us on the Pints and Pews. So I just want to wish her a happy birthday on behalf of myself and my wife. And that's our youngest. And I know yours is a little bit older than that, but the kids are getting old. She's almost out of her teenage years, practically out of them. And
The kids are getting old? Have you looked in the mirror lately, pal?
And next thing you know, they'll be flying the coop. Although that doesn't happen as early as it once did, right, Robert?
Well, seeing that, I just got all confused when you said that. You said they're flying the coop. That means they're going to live with your mother-in-law, Mrs.
Coop. They're going to live with Mrs. Coop.
There we go. Another one of our fantastic listeners.
Yes, one of our very loyal listeners, too. That's for sure. So Florida, so are we still big in...
Not so much this time in Rhode Island, but I mean, these are downloads and listeners are two different things. I know for myself, I listen to all kinds of podcasts, but I don't download them, so I wouldn't show up on anybody's analytics. So
that's
it's tough to say, right?
I you know what? I get that because I don't think I download either. I think I just put out my Spotify as I'm walking Bixby and I just listen to the podcast.
So the best thing you can do is if you don't download the Pints and Pews,
give them
throw us a like, put a thumbs up or a heart or whatever it is on your platform on there, because we do see those come through. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're on Spotify and if you're on, a lot of them are on Apple Podcasts, you know, throw us a review on there too. Like it only takes a moment. You put a couple words on there. And just having those ratings and having those reviews on those helps push the podcast out to others, right? Yeah. Because we are pretty much a niche market as far as the beer drinking and Catholic faith. But the more people like us and the more people put a review, right, the more circulation we're going to get.
Just put like a comment, like how young and handsome that Dennis chap sounds on the air.
That's why we don't put your picture up on the social media.
Who was that? That was Marcus Grodi when we first saw him at that book launching. Hey, Robert, didn't he look, not that he still looks great, but he looked much younger and what was it? Younger and taller.
10, 15 years ago, we looked a lot younger and taller too, didn't we?
Well, there's a guy who we should get on the program. Remember?
You get on that, buddy.
Yeah.
But okay. Dennis, as always, the time seems to have flown by and my hourglass, even though I sprayed part of it on the floor, is just about empty.
I love the way you keep that just about empty and you say those words, because every time you've got about a mouthful left. Well done, Robert. It's always a pleasure, both the pint and the conversation.
Well, especially the pint. I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed the Duvel beer. I don't enjoy the Duvel in real life.
No.
The Duvel beer was very much a nice pint to go along today. Great. And how about the Grolsch there, buddy?
Grosch, and I even followed your footsteps this time, left a little mouthful left, but the Grosch was really good. It's always a pleasure as well to talk about our Catholic faith.
Very true, very true. Now, just before we wrap up here, Dennis, perhaps there's just one small favor we could ask again of our listeners.
If you could take a quick moment and a couple of clicks to follow us on the Pints and Pews podcast on your favorite platform and give us a review.
And while you're at it, give us a like on Facebook or follow along on the platform formerly known as Twitter or Instagram. Drop us a line at any of those three places or at pintsandpews@gmail.com. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners.
And stop by catholicmoment.ca to peruse our Pints and Pews caps or t-shirts, or even one of Robert's books, two books, which I think maybe even a third might be on the way in the near future.
God willing, God willing. And Dennis, finally, why don't you remind our listeners of the wise words of G.K. Chesterton, which appear on our t-shirts?
In Catholicism, the pint, the pipe, and the cross can all fit together.
God bless.
Take care, Robert.